Hello, and welcome to the Small Business University audio presentation of the month. This monthly CD web series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of teaching small business owners how to run profitable companies. Each month, a different national speaker or business owner shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. There is a classic book written by Michael Gerber for small business owners. It's called The E-Myth. Several years ago, it was updated and called The E-Myth Revisited. Both are must-reads for any small business owner. This presentation by Robert Clements will focus on the five core principles of the E-Myth philosophy. This program will help you as a small business owner to begin to focus on where you are going and how you're going to get there. Bob is a native of Omaha, Nebraska, and received his Juris Doctorate in 1973 from Creighton University School of Law. He was a practicing attorney for more than 25 years and worked primarily in the areas of business law, commercial transactions, and banking. Bob is also a certified senior E-Myth consultant. Bob has guided many business owners through difficult organizational, planning, and financial issues, and has trained and served as a facilitator and mediator in numerous cases. In 1999, Bob discovered the E-Myth, in which best-selling author Michael Gerber described every business owner Bob had ever worked with. After training with Michael and his team at E-Myth Worldwide, there began an odyssey of transformation for himself and the many business owners with whom he and E-Myth Benchmark have worked since. During this presentation, Bob is going to touch on the five core principles of the E-Myth philosophy. If you are the typical small business owner, you're great at working in the business. Hopefully, this presentation will begin the transformation of your beginning to work on the business.
Hello, my name is Bob Clements, and I am co-founder and co-owner of E-Myth Benchmark, a small business development company serving clients of all sizes across the United States and beyond. Today, I would like to talk about why most small businesses don't work and what to do about it. But before I begin that conversation, let's understand what we mean by small business. In our parlance, a small business does not designate a business of any particular size, but in fact refers to businesses that are owner-operated. Owner-operated businesses represent 7.8% of all businesses in the U.S. and an even higher percentage of businesses in other countries around the world. It also represents businesses that employ about 53% of people that are employed by anybody, including the government, school districts, and so on. So today, what I want to accomplish is two things. One, I would like to cause you to question everything that you know or think you know about business, about small business, about your business. And in order to do that, I'm going to have to ask you to do something. I'm going to have to ask you to uncross your arms, meaning uncross your minds or anything else that you have to uncross to consider the possibility the experience that you've had up to this point is not necessarily your best teacher, as the cliche goes, but in fact may be your worst teacher. It's your experience that keeps you going back to work, back to the office, back to the shop, and doing the same thing, essentially the same thing, over and over again, and praying for a different result and never really getting it. The second thing that I want to accomplish today is to give you a gift. And that gift is a framework of understanding for how you even begin to think about transforming your business, the results you're getting, and so on, into the business that you dreamt about when you first decided to open it, or when you first bought it, or when you first inherited it through your family. So it begins with the concept of the E-Myth. Many of you have heard of it, some of you haven't, but let's jump into it. The E-Myth, ladies and gentlemen, is the entrepreneurial myth. It's the myth that the vast majority of businesses out there are really started by entrepreneurs, and they're not. The greatest number of businesses are started by what we've come to call technicians suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure. You know, the carpenter starts a construction company, the plumber starts a plumbing company, the accountant an accountancy, the widget inventor a widget-making firm, and so on and so on. Every one of them operating under the fatal assumption that because they understand the technical work, that suddenly means they know how to run a business that does it. And that, of course, is completely false. As a result, most businesses either fail entirely or they fail to give the owner anything close to the experience they were hoping for when they started the business. And it lies in the fact that every single business is absolutely perfectly designed to get the result it's getting now. And the reason why it's designed that way is it was designed by its owner. Wittingly or unwittingly, consciously or unconsciously, the way the owner thinks is what happens. And so the bottom line is that your business and the business that does many times what you're doing for a fraction of the hassle and with a fraction of the frustration, the only difference between those two is that you don't think like the owner of the other business. So today we're going to talk about what that means in terms of your business and how it impacts your ability to change it. And it begins with what we call the E-Myth point of view. The E-Myth point of view has five parts to it. The first is the principle of life. So write this down. My life is my only business. My life is my only business. You created your business to give you more life, didn't you? Doesn't anybody? So the question you really have to ask yourself at the outset is your business giving you more life, or is your business taking your life? In other words, has your life and your business become one? If it has, that's a serious issue in the very beginning, and that's the first issue that has to be addressed. So the question becomes, how do you design a business that actually gives you more life instead of takes the life from you? The second point of view has to do with what's called the law of objectivization. The law of objectivization is a principle which simply states that the job of the owner of the business and the product that the owner of the business has is not what the business delivers to its ultimate customer. The product of the owner of the business is the business itself, the business that delivers whatever it delivers to the ultimate customer. So in one sense, as a technician, as a tactician, as somebody who understands the technical side of the business, you certainly have the job of creating the widget, of selling the widget, of servicing the customer, and so forth. But the owner in you, the leader in you, has a very, very different job. It's called the business itself. And in order to see it, you literally have to get out of it. In order to see what's in the forest, you have to get out of the forest so that you can see the entire picture. So let's digress for a minute and talk about three personalities as we understand this concept. And I'm going to talk about three personalities, and I'm going to give you this premise to begin with. And the premise is that in order for your business to work, in order for any business to work effectively, consistently, predictably, these three personalities have to be present, accounted for, and firing on all cylinders at the same time in every business. So the first personality is a word I've mentioned. It's called the entrepreneur. The first personality is the entrepreneur, who is also known as the inventor. The job of the entrepreneur is to know the vision, to understand the vision, and to articulate the vision of what the business will look like when it's done. Whether that's 3 years from now, 5 years from now, whenever that is, the entrepreneur constantly keeps her eyes, his eyes on the long ball that says, what is my business going to be when it's done, not just in terms of its size, not just in terms of its revenue, its customer base, and so on, but also in terms of the qualitative issues such as customer experience, how do the employees experience it, what differentiates us from everybody else that's in our industry, etc., etc. The second personality is what we call the technician, as we've also discussed. Not technician with a capital T, but technician with a small t. The technician is the doer. the doer of anything that needs to be done in the business. You know, opening the doors, making it, shipping it, selling it, doing all the things that you do in the business, changing light bulbs, you know, putting the money in the bank, and so on. And, you know, that's their job is to make sure that whatever needs to get done is done. The third personality, and you might think of this personality as being the bridge between the first two, is called the manager. If the technician is the doer and the entrepreneur is the inventor, the manager is the enabler. The manager is the one who figures out how the vision is going to become real in the doing of it by technicians. So to the manager, the question is, how does work work? Now let's look at these three personalities in terms of three concepts. You know, the three concepts we all think about every day: time, money, and work. To the technician, time, money, and work almost become one thing. The technician trades his or her time for a certain amount of money by doing a certain amount of work. And the type of work that the technician does usually dictates the amount of money they're going to receive. So it's simply a trade, one for one. Time, money, work, time, money, work, time, money, work. It's almost like a word all by itself. To the manager, a business can have all the money or all the income in the world called revenue, but if it doesn't make a profit, it's not a business. So the technician doesn't really care where the money comes from or how it gets there. It's just, I put the time in, you pay me. To the manager, the money has to be profit. And to the manager, time and work become a commodity to be managed. For example, the way you do accounting today in your business, many of you are using a QuickBooks Pro program or Quicken or some similar program, some computer-based program. 40 years ago, you probably weren't doing that. 40 years ago, there was somebody sitting there with a green eye shade looking over spreadsheets with sharpened pencils doing the books. So time has changed in how books are kept. The type of work has changed in how books are kept. So that, and the job of the manager is to figure out how to create the greatest number of results with the fewest resources in the shortest amount of time with the least amount of effort and so on, and with the greatest amount of revenue and profit to the bottom line. Finally, you have the entrepreneur who thinks differently again. To the entrepreneur, money is equity. Money is about the value of the business and how the value of the business grows over time. And time is eternity. To the entrepreneur will eat mac and cheese as long as it takes to make sure that the vision happens and that the dream becomes real. And work to the entrepreneur is pure creation. So, now I want you to imagine what I said before about the fact that all three of these personalities have to be alive, well, and firing all cylinders at the same time, and you, as a business owner, have to be, to some extent, each one of those personalities. Are you beginning to feel the dissonance here of what happens? Well, of course, what happens in the great majority of businesses is this. The entrepreneur ultimately goes into a deep coma. Because over time, our technician begins to realize that that vision that he or she thought about when the business started, that idea of what the business was going to look like when it's done, almost seems impossible, if it doesn't seem entirely impossible. And pretty soon, the vision begins to morph and modify and blur to the point where it literally becomes non-existent. The second thing that happens is the manager begins to go to sleep because it becomes easier to just do things yourself than to teach other people how to do them and expect them to become reliable and expect them to become consistent and so on and so on. You know, I told them, I told them, I told them. So finally what happens is the technician takes over the ship and it becomes not a business but a job. And as Michael Gerber says, It's the worst job in the world because each of us are working for a lunatic. So, examining those three personalities, let's go back again to the five core principles. We're now on principle number three. Principle number three is working on it, not just in it. In order for you to even begin to think about transforming your business into something that's going to work, you have to stop spending all of your time only working in it. You have to allocate some of your time, and we recommend in the beginning at least an hour a day, working on the business and not just in the business. So what's the difference between those two? Well, it's the difference between something that is strategic and something that is tactical, but let me put it in a little bit more pragmatic tone. Imagine that you go out to sell your product, and the only reason why you're out selling your product is to sell your product. In other words, you're trying to increase sales, so you're out there doing the selling, doing the selling, doing the selling. That's called working in it. But if one of the reasons you're out there selling is to figure out how your product is sold, by what words you use to sell your product, how many people you have to contact in order to get somebody to say yes, and so on and so on and so on, so that you could create a process for someone else to do what you're doing, that's part of working on it. That's part of creating leverage so that eventually your dream of growth and so on and freedom for yourself can become a reality. So that leads us ultimately to the next principle, which becomes quite obvious at this point, and that's called systemization. The key ingredient for any business to begin to leverage itself and to begin to grow itself and to begin to own the intelligence of what it does, to understand what it does besides something that lives in the head of the owner only, or besides something that lives in the head of certain key people, is systemization. Now, at this point, you know, we hear all the time somebody saying, well, you know, I mean, I know other businesses are like that, and you can sure systemize other businesses, but mine isn't like that. I mean, you can't do that with a business like mine, and so on. The only problem is that it's been done in businesses just like yours, and I don't even care what business you're in. It's been done in every kind of business imaginable. Edwards Deming, who was really considered the father of the organization of the Japanese Industrial Revolution, once said, if you can't describe everything that you do in terms of a process, then I would suggest you don't know what you're doing. And it also means that you have to understand systems and what a system is. Systems go beyond simply scripts. They go beyond simply rote sorts of lists that have to be complied with word for word for word. They also involve checklists, templates, pictures. The systems come in many forms: soft systems, hard systems, information systems, and so on. The fifth principle recognizes that systems themselves are not static, they are dynamic. The fifth principle is called the business development cycle. It recognizes that for a business to thrive and for a business to grow, it has to continually be in the process of innovation. And in order to be in the process of innovation, it has to continually quantify what it's doing. And once it quantifies what it's doing, it then orchestrates the things that work and sets aside the things that don't, and goes back to the business once again of innovation. So it's a cycle: innovation, quantification, and orchestration. Innovation, quantification, and orchestration. Now, all of that's fine and dandy when it comes to thinking differently, learning how to think differently in the business. But once you've done that, the real question then becomes, what do you do about it? While business development is always challenging, as between shifting your mindset and the paradigms that keep you doing what you're doing now and figuring out what you do about it once the mindset has changed, the part that determines what you do about it certainly is the most straightforward of the two. In the E-Myth structure, this has been divided into what are called the seven centers of management attention. The first of these is leadership. leadership lies at the core of all remaining six centers of management attention and touches each of them in a very profound way. Leadership, at its most basic, involves three elements. The first is vision. As I discussed earlier, it's necessary for you or anyone in a business to create a clear vision and a clear understanding that can be articulated of what the business is going to look like when it's finally done, how the business is going to differentiate itself from its competitors, how the business is going to sustain itself, how the business is going to create a business model that not only works, but actually creates what we would call a sustainable competitive advantage. And that begins with a vision. That begins with a clear understanding of where you're going. If you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there, as the saying goes. You know, as you invite your employees to come to work every day, you need to tell them where they're going when they get there. The second element of leadership is action. Vision without action is just a dream. On the other hand, action without vision is chaos, which is the way most businesses work. But you put the two together and you begin to create a powerful model for not only understanding where the business is going and what the end game is going to be, but the roadmap to get there and the key and strategic action steps to make it happen. The third element of leadership is spirit. Without spirit, it truly is possible to create a bureaucracy. And that's certainly not the intent. The spirit is the glue. It's the culture under which the business operates. It's the game worth playing, if you will. It's how you define the game that you're creating that is more worth playing than not playing, that is more worth playing for your employees than not playing, that is more worth playing for your customers than not playing, that is more worth playing for your vendors than not playing. The next three elements of the seven centers are what we would call the three essential disciplines. The first is marketing. The second is money. And the third is management. These are not what a business does. These are what a business does to keep track, to measure, to predict, to plan, and so forth, to create strategy. And within these are five key strategies that I'm going to discuss. And the first is marketing, which is a strategy in and of itself. Marketing deals with three essential questions. And each of these three questions involve many, many, many other questions that would be asked in conjunction with it, but you can boil the marketing strategy down to these three questions. The first one is, who is my most probable customer? In other words, who is the person who is most likely to buy what I sell? The second question is, why do they buy from me? So the first question, as you can see, is a very demographic kind of question. You can describe the person. You can describe what they do for a living. You can describe their income bracket. You can describe certain other things about them that would identify them characteristically. The second question is a much more psychographic question. It's a question of what gets somebody to simply pull out the checkbook and decide to write the check or to produce the credit card and say, I'm in. I'm your customer. And the third question is, where are they? In order to find that person, to make that decision, you have to understand where you're going to deliver the message and how you're going to deliver the message, which is answered by the question, where are they? The second strategy is in money, which is the third of the seven centers of management attention. It's the financial strategy, and the financial strategy has much more to do with financial management and financial planning than it does financial reporting. Financial reporting is extremely important because it tells you what you need to know in order to plan, and it also tells you where you've been besides where you're going. But for the most part, people use it much too much just to determine where they've been without really using it as a planning tool, without using it as a tool to create budgeting, without using it as a tool to create cash plans and other tools that are necessary for understanding the money. The money is the lifeblood of the business. It's the thing that fuels the marketing strategy, the operating strategy, the hiring strategy, all of those different strategies, as well as being the end game of the business, the end value of the business. Most businesses should keep what I would call two sets of books. One, an accounting set of books, one that is consistent with generally accepted accounting principles and is appropriate for the filing of tax returns and so forth, but another set of books that is simply a cash plan. It doesn't necessarily involve things that are taxable income, but it usually does involve both, and it also involves expenditures that are both tax-deductible expenditures as well as non-deductible expenditures. It really is only about cash movement. Where's the cash coming from? When's it coming? And where does it have to go? And when does it have to go there? And that plan is something that should be reviewed daily. So that's the money strategy. And then you have the entire puzzle piece called management. And management really involves the last three of the strategies. Management involves three things: organization, systems, and people. So if you can imagine that you've created a vision for your business, you've created a clear understanding of where you want to take your business, the next question then becomes for you, what does the organization of that look like in terms of function? In other words, what functions would have to exist in that future business that you create 5 years hence, whenever it's created, without regard to any of the people that you have now? Just assume that all of those people are not there anymore and you don't even know the identity of the people that you're going to be hiring in the future. What does the business functionally have to look like, and how does that have to be organized in terms of reporting mechanisms and reporting hierarchies and so forth in order for that business to function effectively? The next strategy then is the system strategy. Once you have identified the functions and once you have clearly identified the organization, what systems would have to be in place for you to make sure that the work is being done by people you don't even know yet, consistently, predictably, every time, on time, as promised, the way you would do it if you were doing it yourself? What are the system strategies within each one of the functional areas that you have identified in your org strategy? And then finally is people, last but not least. In most businesses, this happens in reverse order. We have the people, so we figure out where we're going to put them and what we're going to have them do and how we're going to have them do it and what they're really good at. So we begin to design businesses around the personalities of individual people. This is particularly true in family businesses. But the fact of the matter is, the selection of who needs to be sitting in what seats on the bus and where are they most appropriate to become masters of particular systems to perform certain functions within the business is really the last decision that is made. So that represents the first four of the seven centers of management attention. The fifth, sixth, and seventh are the essential processes, meaning these are the things that a business does: lead generation, lead conversion, and client fulfillment. Lead generation, lead conversion, and client fulfillment. Lead generation involves two primary issues that are derived from the marketing strategy that I talked about earlier. The first is, what is the message that's going to be heard above the absolute din and noise that is out there advertising to everyone under the sun? What's the message that's going to be heard above any other message out there? And that message is determined by who your most probable customer is and why they buy from you. And the second element of lead generation is channel. In other words, How do you deliver the message to them? Where are they most likely to see it? How are they most likely to hear it? And so on and so on and so on. And that, again, has to do with the nature of the product you're selling, as well as the nature of your most probable customer and where they are and so on. You may be a neighborhood business, that's one thing. You may be a national business, that's another. You may be an international business, that's entirely another, and so on. Number six is lead conversion, which is all about need. Needs-based selling. In most businesses, I would suggest that selling isn't even an appropriate term. I prefer to call it managing the buying process. Because in most businesses, when somebody is willing to begin a conversation with you, they have already made a buying decision at a certain level. The real challenge for most business owners is to not screw it up from there. Is to manage it well and to make sure that that person is well educated in the service or the product involved, and that the business has a clear understanding of the needs of that person. If you can solve each and every person's problem in a well-targeted way, sales will take care of themselves. But the first conversation is all about learning and understanding the needs of your client, and it should be 85 to 90% questions, and not statements and boasting and puffing about your own product. That should come naturally at the very, very end of the conversation. And then finally is the puzzle piece, client fulfillment. Client fulfillment is, again, about three things: production, delivery, and service. It's keeping the promise that was made in the lead generation process and in the lead conversion process. This is where most businesses have a unique opportunity to really shine and to make it possible to own a sustainable competitive advantage. This is where you have a unique opportunity to completely blow the socks off of your clients and your customers. Obviously, the cheapest client to get is the one you already have. The question is, what concentration are you placing on keeping that client, on retaining that client, and on continually improving your relationship with that client, both in terms of the amount of business that you're providing to them as well as their view of you as a provider? So if all of this seems to be somewhat overwhelming, the fact of the matter is, it is overwhelming. I won't deny that. And anybody who thinks it isn't is looking around for a silver bullet, and there isn't one. Looking around for the magic pill, and there isn't one. But the key difference between doing the right work, working on the business and not just in the business, of doing the right strategic work and not just simply running around being a technician all day, the key difference is that whatever overwhelm is felt by the growth, by the act of business development and by growing the business, is overwhelm coming at you instead of from you. And that makes all the difference in the world, not only in the feeling it gives you, but in the results it gives you in the production of the, in the ultimate growth of the business and the ultimate development of the business. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. And I wish you great success, and hope to see you sometime in the future. Thank you.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 800-432-7963. The vision of Grandian Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandiassociates.com or give us a call at 800-432-7963. The Small Business University audio series is produced and distributed by Grandian Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.